Beginning of the End, Chapter 40, Balaam Tries to Curse Israel. This chapter is based on Numbers chapters 22 to 24. Preparing to invade Canaan immediately, the Israelites camped beside the Jordan River above its entrance into the Dead Sea, just across from the plain of Jericho on the borders of Moab. The Moabites had not been harassed by Israel, yet they had watched with troubled uneasiness everything that had happened in the surrounding countries. The Amorites, who had forced them to retreat, had been conquered by the Hebrews. Israel now possessed the territory the Amorites had taken from Moab. The armies of Bashan had fallen before the mysterious power hidden in the cloudy pillar, and the Hebrews occupied the giant strongholds. The Moabites dared not risk launching an attack, but as Pharaoh had done, they determined to use magic to counteract the work of God. The people of Moab had close connections with the Midianites, and Balak, the king of Moab, gained their cooperation against Israel by the message, "Now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field." Balaam of Mesopotamia had a reputation of having supernatural powers, and his fame had reached Moab. So messengers were sent to get him to use his divinations and enchantments against Israel. The ambassadors set out at once on their long journey. When they found Balaam, they delivered the message of their king. "Look, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are settling next to me. Therefore, please come at once, curse this people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to drive them out of the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." Balaam was once a prophet of God, but he had backslidden and given himself up to covetousness. When the messengers announced their errand, he knew very well that it was his duty to refuse the rewards of Balak and send the ambassadors away. But he took a chance on lingering with temptation and urged the messengers to stay that night, declaring that he could give no answer until he had asked counsel of the Lord. Balaam knew that his curse could not harm Israel, but his pride was flattered by the words, "He whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." The bribe of costly gifts inflamed his covetousness, and while he professed to obey the will of God, he tried to go along with the desires of Balak. In the night the angel of God came to Balaam with the message, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." How one sin opened the door to Satan's control. In the morning, Balaam sent the messengers away, but did not tell them what the Lord had said. Angry that his visions of wealth and honor had been dispelled, he exclaimed, "Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you." Balaam loved the wages of unrighteousness, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. The sin of covetousness had destroyed his integrity, and through this one fault, Satan gained complete control of him. The tempter constantly presents worldly gain and honor to lure people from the service of God. This is how many people are persuaded to leave the path of faith honestly. One wrong step makes the next one easier, and they become more and more careless. They will do the most terrible things once they have given themselves to the control of greed and desire for power. Many tell themselves that they can set aside their honesty and faithfulness for a while and change their mind when they please. They are tangling themselves up in Satan's trap, and usually they do not escape. When the messengers told Balak of the prophet's refusal, they gave no hint that God had forbidden him. Supposing that Balaam's delay was to obtain a richer reward, the king sent a bigger group of princes, who were more honorable than the first, with authority to accept any conditions Balaam might demand. Balak's urgent message was, "Please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse this people for me." In response, Balaam professed great, honorable principles and integrity. No amount of gold and silver could persuade him to go against the will of God, but he longed to go along with the king's request. Although God had already made his will known to him, he urged the messengers to stay so that he could ask God again. In the night, the Lord appeared to Balaam and said, "If the men come to call you, rise and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do." The Lord would permit Balaam to follow his own will to a certain extent because he was determined to do it. He chose his own way and then tried to get the Lord to approve it. Thousands of people today are following a similar path. Their duty is plainly set before them in the Bible or clearly indicated by circumstances and reason. But because these evidences are different from what they want, they ignore the evidence and seem to go to God to learn their duty. They pray long and earnestly for light, but God will not be trifled with. He often permits such persons to follow their own desires and suffer the result. My people would not heed my voice, so I gave them over to their own stubborn heart, to walk in their own counsels. Psalm 81, verse 11 and 12. One who clearly sees a duty should not go to God with the prayer to be excused from doing it. A donkey sees more than a prophet. Annoyed at Balaam's delay and expecting another refusal, the messengers from Moab started out on their homeward journey without talking to Balaam again. Every excuse for complying with Balak's request had now been removed, but Balaam was determined to get the reward. Taking the donkey he usually rode, he started out and pressed eagerly forward to catch up with the messengers, impatient to gain the coveted reward. But the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. Balaam did not see the divine messenger, but the animal did, and turned aside from the highway into a field. With cruel blows, Balaam brought the beast back into the path, but again in a narrow place, shut in by walls, the angel appeared. The donkey, trying to avoid the frightening figure, crushed her master's foot against the wall. Balaam did not know that God was obstructing his path. He became exasperated, and beating his donkey unmercifully, forced it to move forward. Again, in a narrow place where there was no way to turn, either to the right hand or to the left, the angel appeared, and the poor donkey, trembling with terror, fell to the earth under its rider. Balaam's rage was out of control, and with his staff he struck the animal more cruelly than before. God now opened the animal's mouth, and by a dumb donkey speaking with man's voice, restrained the madness of the prophet. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 16. "What have I done to you," it said, "that you have struck me these three times?" Furious, Balaam answered the beast as he would have spoken to an intelligent being. "Because you have abused me, I wish there were a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you." The eyes of Balaam were now opened, and he saw the angel of God standing with drawn sword, ready to kill him. In terror, he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. The angel said, "Behold, I have come out to stand against you, because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would also have killed you by now and let her live." Balaam owed his life to the poor animal he had treated so cruelly. The man who claimed to be a prophet of the Lord was so blinded by greed and ambition that he could not discern the angel of God visible to his beast. "The god of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not." 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4, King James Version. How many people rush on in forbidden paths, disobeying God's law, and cannot tell that God and his angels are against them? Like Balaam, they are angry at those who would prevent their ruin. A righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Proverbs 12, verse 10. Few people realize, as they should, the sinfulness of abusing animals or leaving them to suffer from neglect. Animals were created to serve us, but we have no right to cause them pain by harsh treatment. Those who will abuse an animal because it is in their power are both cowards and tyrants. Many people think that their cruelty will never be known, because the poor, unspeaking animal cannot reveal it. But if the eyes of these people could be opened, they would see an angel of God standing as a witness to testify against them in the courts above. A day is coming when judgment will be pronounced against those who abuse God's creatures. Balaam prevented from cursing Israel. When he saw the messenger of God, Balaam exclaimed in terror, "I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back." The Lord allowed him to continue on his journey, but divine power would control his words. God would give Moab evidence that the Hebrews were under the guardianship of heaven, and he did this when he showed them how powerless Balaam was to utter a curse against them. The king of Moab, informed of Balaam's approach, went out to meet him. When he expressed astonishment at Balaam's delay in view of the rich rewards awaiting him, the prophet answered, "Have I any power at all to say anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that I must speak." Balaam greatly regretted this restriction because he was afraid that his plans could not be carried out. The king, with the chief dignitaries of the kingdom, escorted Balaam to the high places of Baal, where they could see the Hebrew camp. How little the Israelites knew of what was taking place so near them! How little they knew of the care of God extended over them day and night! Balaam had some knowledge of the sacrificial offerings of the Hebrews, and he hoped that by making more impressive sacrifices he could ensure the success of his sinful projects. 7 altars were erected, and he offered a sacrifice on each. He then withdrew to a desolate height to meet with God. With the nobles and princes of Moab, the king stood beside the sacrifice, watching for the return of the prophet. He came at last, and the people waited for the words that would paralyze forever that strange power exerted on behalf of the hated Israelites. Balaam said, "Balak the king of Moab has brought me from Aram, from the mountains of the east. Come curse Jacob for me, and come denounce Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? Who can count the dust of Jacob, or number 1/4 of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his." As Balaam looked on Israel's encampment, he was astonished at the evidence of their prosperity. He had been told they were a rude, disorganized multitude, infesting the country in roving bands, a pest and terror to surrounding nations. But what he saw was just the opposite of all this. He saw the vast extent and perfect arrangement of their camp, everything bearing the marks of discipline and order. He was shown the favor with which God regarded Israel and their distinctive character as his chosen people. They were not to stand on a level with other nations, but to be exalted above them all. They were to be a people dwelling alone, not reckoning itself among the nations. How strikingly was this prophecy fulfilled in the subsequent history of Israel. Through all the years, they have remained a distinct people. Balaam sees God's favor on Israel. Balaam saw the growth and prosperity of the true Israel of God to the close of time, the special favor of the Most High on those who love and fear him. He saw them supported by his arm as they entered the dark valley of the shadow of death, and he witnessed them coming out of their graves, crowned with glory, honor, and immortality. He viewed the redeemed rejoicing in the unfading glories of the new earth. As he saw the crown of glory on every head and their endless life of happiness, he uttered the solemn prayer, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his." If Balaam had been in the habit of accepting the light God had given, he would have severed all connection with Moab immediately. He would have returned to God with deep repentance. But Balaam loved the rewards of unrighteousness. Balak had expected a curse that would fall like a withering plague on Israel, and he angrily exclaimed, "What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and look, you have blessed them bountifully." Balaam claimed to have spoken the words from a careful respect for the will of God, but they had actually been forced from his lips by divine power. "Must I not take heed to speak what the Lord has put in my mouth?" Balak tries again. Balak decided that the impressive scene presented by the vast camp of the Hebrews had so frightened Balaam that he did not dare to practice his magic arts against them. The king determined to take the prophet to some point where he could see only a small part of the camp. Again, 7 altars were built, and the same offerings were placed on them as at the first. The king and his princes stayed by the sacrifices while Balaam stepped away to meet with God. Again, the prophet was given a divine message, which he was powerless to change or withhold. When he appeared, Balak answered him, "What has the Lord spoken?" The answer struck terror to the heart of the king and princes. "God is not a man that he should lie. Behold, I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen wickedness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them." The great magician had tried his power of enchantment, but while Israel was under God's protection, no people or nation, aided by all the power of Satan, would be able to overcome them. All the world would wonder at the marvelous work of God for his people, that a man should be so controlled by divine power as to utter, instead of curses, rich and precious promises in heavenly poetry. in future times when Satan inspired evildoers to misrepresent and destroy God's people, this event would strengthen their courage and faith in God. The king of Moab, discouraged and distressed, exclaimed, "Neither curse them at all nor bless them at all." But he determined to try again. He now took Balaam to Mount Peor, where there was a temple devoted to the immoral worship of Baal. Here they offered the same number of sacrifices, but Balaam did not even pretend to work his sorcery. He looked out over the tents of Israel, and the divine message came from his lips. "How lovely are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel, like valleys that stretch out, like gardens by the riverside. His king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. Blessed is he who blesses you, and cursed is he who curses you." Balaam prophesied that Israel's king would be greater than Agag. This was the name given to the kings of the Amalekites, who were at this time a very powerful nation. But Israel, if true to God, would conquer all her enemies. The king of Israel was the Son of God. His throne was one day to be established in the earth, and his power to be higher than all earthly kingdoms. Balaam loses all he tried to gain. Balak was overwhelmed with disappointed hope, fear, and rage. He was angry that Balaam could have given him even a small hint that he could expect him to curse Israel. Balak looked with scorn on the prophet's compromising, deceptive ways and exclaimed fiercely, "Now therefore, flee to your place. I said I would greatly honor you, but in fact the Lord has kept you back from honor." The answer was that the king had been warned ahead of time that Balaam could speak only the message given him from God. Before returning to his people, Balaam uttered a beautiful prophecy of the world's Redeemer and the final destruction of the enemies of God. "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and batter the brow of Moab, and destroy all the sons of tumult." He closed by predicting the complete destruction of Moab and Edom, of Amalek and the Kenites, and so left the Moabite king with no ray of hope. Disappointed in his hopes for wealth and promotion, and conscious that he had brought on himself the displeasure of God, Balaam returned from his self-chosen mission. The controlling power of the Spirit of God left him, and his covetousness took over. He was ready to do anything to get the reward promised by Balak. Balaam knew that the prosperity of Israel depended on their obedience to God. There was no way to conquer them except by leading them into sin. He immediately returned to Moab and told his plans to the king, to separate the children of Israel from God by enticing them into idolatry. If they could be led to engage in the sensually uninhibited worship of Baal and Ashtaroth, their all-powerful protector would become their enemy, and they would be overcome by the fierce, warlike nations around them. The king readily accepted this plan, and Balaam remained to help in putting it into effect. Balaam witnessed the success of his satanic scheme. He saw the curse of God imposed on his people, and thousands falling under his judgments. But the divine justice that punished sin in Israel did not allow the tempters to escape. In the war of Israel against the Midianites, Balaam was killed. He had sensed that his end was near when he exclaimed, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his." But he had not chosen to live the life of the righteous, and he died with the enemies of God. The end of Balaam was similar to that of Judas. Both men tried to unite the service of God with greed for riches, and met with notable failure. Balaam acknowledged the true God. Judas believed in Jesus. Balaam hoped to make the service of Jehovah the stepping stone to wealth and worldly honor. Judas expected, by his connection with Christ, to secure riches and promotion in the worldly kingdom that he believed the Messiah was about to set up. Both Balaam and Judas received great light, but a single cherished sin poisoned the entire character and caused their destruction. Little by little, one cherished sin will disgrace the character. Giving in to one evil habit breaks down the defenses of the heart and mind and opens the way for Satan to lead us away from God. The only safe way is to pray as David did. "Uphold my steps in your paths, that my footsteps may not slip." Psalm 17, verse 5.